It was good knowing you.
It was going to be good.
Leaving the same place.
That's right. Punishment for the political incorrectness of using PowerPoint.
I was teasing. I couldn't resist my
Oh, okay.
How many were part of the great conspiracy? Right? Yeah. That's what is that?
See, there's no
part
of it.
Yeah,
there.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. My cell phone is off, it turns out. Oh, I guess. I don't know if I need this or not, but.
Make recording easier.
Oh, really? Is this being recorded by O'Reilly Powers that are?
Not that I know of.
Just by Powers that
are. Yeah, just.
Is this hell?
Yes.
Do I sound more important this way?
Yes, sir.
Good. Sir, yes, sir.
Definitely.
Any, I guess we're starting now. People are still kind of just wondering. You may have noticed I'm not Dave Weiner, so I don't want to disappoint anybody. I do want to represent Dave to some extent because I use his blogging software. He got me started in blogging. He's a good guy. We miss him. I wish he was here. I wish I was hearing his talk instead of giving mine, because then you know how he was talking about. But you know, we'll get around to it. Anyway. This is a quickly rearranged and edited to presentation that I gave to JabberCon in Munich that Tim really liked, and Phil Woodley, is he here? From there you are.
The
CIO of Utah. He saw this PowerPoint on, or it wasn't in PowerPoint, the day paper. Some of this was done with ThinkFree, which is a cool system, by the way. Anybody use ThinkFree? Anybody? There's market share for you. What do you know? Anyway, it's a Java PowerPoint-like program. I'm going to talk about infrastructure, why geeks build it, what Hollywood can understand it, how business can take advantage of it, and go a little bit farther than that. And I want to give just a little tiny bit of background, because I wear several hats at the same time, and it's a really fun way to be, but it causes a great deal of confusion. I'm senior editor of Linux Journal, which means I am the oldest editor on staff. It means nothing else besides that. I am the least geeky of all the guys on staff. I'm co-author of the Clue Train Manifesto. I got geek chalk. You geek chalking, right?
Yes.
That was very cool. Yeah, it's right. I am one third of an author, but that's actually wrong. You have to hack that. I'm actually one quarter of the authors of the Clue Train Manifesto.
You find a link to that on Doc's blog.
Yeah, right. To geek chalking.
Chalk yourself.
Yeah, go chalk yourself. Chalk yourself right out the window. And what started out really is a steam valve in everything else that I do. It's basically this outline that I keep open while I'm doing all of the other things, is my weblog. And if you look up my name on Google, the vast majority of the references to me refer to the blog and not those other things, in spite of the fact that Linux Journal has a paid circulation of over 100,000 and or something like that. And Clue Train is sold all over the world in 9 languages. And started, as far as I know, the only book that started out on the web as a website. And yet, the weblog has far more Google juice, as somebody told me. Sounds really gooey, but I apparently have that. Anyway, what I wanted to do is talk about what happened to me after I was in Munich. I came to London, and this is a story of infrastructure at work. This is geek infrastructure in the great ad hocracy happening in ways that the powers that be cannot possibly understand. It's a fun story. As so many of us have, I arrived in London really unprepared to dial up to anything. Like, oh my God, I forgot. Is Earthlink here or not? You know, it turns out they're not. They're no longer on Earth. They're only in a part of Earth. But it's here and a few other places. But anyway, they weren't there. And so what I did is I went through this infrastructural sojourn, the steps of understanding. So I turned the step. So first I failed to dial up. It's impossible to use that phone either. I just gave up and watched British football, which is the first thing I did. Because the World Cup was going on. And, oops. Hello. Jumping ahead in time. I'm going backwards. No, it's out of control. All right. I go into a hot, crowded, an expensive internet cafe down the street where I got on Google. I just plugged in the laptop. I gave them £2, and I plugged in the laptop, and I typed in wireless, London, and nodes. And I came up with something called consume.net. And consume.net is a bunch of hackers working entirely with free software who put together an amazing guide to all of the wireless base stations all over London. And they display it with this map of a number of base stations. And they have, I've not been there, I don't know what iVision PCR is, or Jasper's Pit, or Posse, or Closer. But there's one there called Kinance Muse. And I just went,
around, and they also display maps. You can actually tell it, okay, I don't want to look at that version, I want to look at maps. And so I said, well, there's Gloucester Road, okay, and right below Gloucester Road was Cromwell, which is where I happened to be. And I looked at the different arrows on these, and I finally kind of homed in on one called Finance Muse. So I thought, okay, well, that's kind of neat. And it says here, you know, the description here is up and running, covering Finance Muse and Kent's Place, and includes outdoor cafes and some. That sounds really good. A really neat thing, too, they do here, I don't know if you can see it, there's the name of the node, there's the distance in meters in the bearing. So you know, this one called Posse is at a bearing of 18 degrees, which is a little bit off of north, 811 meters exactly away. That is very cool. I just really like that. And you can click on any one of those, and the links, they all kind of work. And so here's Kynance Muse. I walked up the street to Kynance Muse, and I saw there are the outdoor cafes, and so I head for Café Delice. Looks like a really cool place. And so I'm sitting outside having, you know, coffee and free broadband. And, by the way, Sony is a camcorder, but it does still shots. Really neat. So this is all done with this little thing. And I'm sitting there, like, I'm grooving that. I don't even know where this is coming from. It's because this, I open this thing up. There's Wi-Fi. It's fast. I'm on the net. I'm blogging away. I'm having a great time. It's warm. It's beautiful. And then, you know, there's another guy with his laptop, another one of these, a couple of tables away. And this other familiar-looking guy with his dog shows up and starts talking techno trash to this other guy. And I said, excuse me, is this your node that I'm using? And he comes over and says, yo, Doc Sells. And I said, yes. He says, well, fuck me. I'm Ben Hammersley. You know, O'Reilly author Ben Hammersley, writing on RSS, an attendee of most of these things. He said he's busy moving now from here, unfortunately, to Florence. But all the better for Florence, I guess. So, I mean, it was just this amazing thing where I just, like, suddenly, like, got grooved in with these guys, and he writes about it on his blog, and he said it's like royalty stopped in for tea or something.
It was like Thomas Edison coming by to use the telephone.
I know, it's silly. my reputation exceeds me. I don't understand it. But anyway, so I'm wondering where the signal is coming from and who's providing it. So I jumped ahead of myself here. So I meet Ben and his beautiful wife Anna and his lovely dog Lucy, and we just got together and like hung out for the weekend and had a great time. So the signal source is revealed. Like there's his Wi-Fi station hanging in the window of his little place right there over the street. Wow. And then I have attract more friends and bring patrons to particulars. This is Chris McRae. Chris is one of the guys in the world who's driving the meme of transparency. He's a marketing guy. His father was an economist who wrote for the Economist in England, and he says, absolutely tired of pushing the idea of transparency, which, of course, we heard Bruce talk about this morning, which I thought was very cool. So there's a little meme work going on. I return the next day after the cafe is closed, and I park my bum in the doorway. That's British for ass. I park my ass in the doorway. And I'm typing away. People are walking by, and the dogs and the kids are very friendly, you know, because you're lower than they are. And the adults all think you're a bum, except you've got a titanium, so maybe you're not a bum. They don't know what to do with that. They just, you know, can't compute it, so they have this sort of weird look that they give you. But then the proprietor of the business in which my bum is parked comes over, and he gets that easy. Hello, you know, using that's a very nice thing. And are you using, he had Wi-Fi in his place. He thought I'd hacked into it, which was kind of interesting. He actually had it there. And I explained to him that his neighbor didn't, so I made friends with him, and I promoted his business, and I put that on the blog. And I contemplated the irony of infrastructure, because the whole time I was there, at two different outdoor cafes, and sitting in this guy's doorway, nobody ever used the public telephone. Ever used the public telephone. But lots of people used the public Wi-Fi, provided by a local citizen, unbeknownst to any of the powers that be. And lots of people used cell phones. So it was a sort of interesting study in the ironies of infrastructure there. And of course, I put it on the blog. I have blog globally, to promote this guy. I did it right while I was sitting and watch this. I'm going to promote this. They play traffic. And so the last day I was there, I went to a place called Garlic Shots, which is this cool pub. David Nokovic, it's in Soho. It's run by the head of the Swedish Hell's Angels. Okay, so it was like lots of face jewelry and black and framing things on walls and so forth. And it's like the most loved place you can imagine. What fantastic place. This guy's name is Matt Jones. And his weblog is called Black Belt Jones. Does anybody know who he is?
Oh, yeah.
Probably a lot of you know who he is by now. Because we're just talking stuff there. And he says, hey, take a look at this. I've been thinking about this today. So I'm talking infrastructure. He shows me this idea that he has called war chalking. And I said, well, that's like the freaking second coming. Why don't you do that? I'll promote it. So, of course, I just, you know, spool the revelation straight to the blog. That's me shooting a picture of it right there that another guy named Gus Grant shot doing. And watch nature take its course. A few days later, he puts up war chalking. I'm promoting it. Lots of other people, Ben's promoting it. Lots of other people are just mentioning it on their blogs. And these things are showing up all over the world now. All of a sudden, war chalking is taking over. It's happening everywhere. I had to put one out on the street in front of my house. My wife was afraid of it. Oh, please. Don't do that. But I had like two base stations in my tiny house. Half of the cat, just one. So I wanted to talk a little bit about nature. This is because this is a natural thing that's happening here. This is, talking about grassroots, I mean, this is something really profound that's going on live. And so I want to talk about the net a little bit. This is a metaphor I got from Craig Burton, who is this, how many people here know who Craig is? A few do. He was here last year. He was really the author of Novell's success in the 80s. And he played Microsoft a yo-yo in a lot of ways. Really brilliant about his strategy with this. He's a very, very insightful guy. So I'm OEMing an awful lot of his insights here. He has this idea that the net is, in fact, a world. Think of it as a hollow sphere made entirely of people and the resources it connects. And in the geometry of a sphere, of course, any two points are visible to any other two points. The effective distance between them is zero. And in fact, it is a kind of a big zero. And he says it's the first world made by people, for people, and we've only begun to terraform. You know, the network services are available on a net, or actually a subset of what might have been available on a Novell LAN many years ago. We have a lot of building out here left to do. And one of the virtues, he says, is the emptiness. And since somebody gets in the middle and says, no, I'll intermediate this for you. We'll take care of this, the inside of this for you. They subtract value. You know, it has to be a vacuum in the middle. It has to be empty. And it gives a new way of looking at end-to-end. You know, what is the end of a sphere? Any point on the sphere is the end of a sphere. And Larry Lessig, in his first book, Code, talks about the end-to-end architecture of the net. Well, this is Craig's way of abstracting that. I think it's a very useful one. So the net, this world was endowed by its creators, I think, with three virtues. These are ones that I've been talking about on Linux Journal on. One is that nobody owns it, the second is that everybody uses it, and the critical to open source and free software is that anybody can improve it. That's how it continues to grow. Anybody is in a position to improve it. So, and the proof is in the protocols and the products that use them. Vince Cerf said the history of the net is a history of its protocols, and the late John Postel said, be conservative in what you do and liberal in what you accept from others. That's the principle of anybody can improve it. And what it's given us is a pile of protocols. The ones at the top are the more established ones. I was talking this morning, we added some more. Beep is a new one. XML, RPC, and SOAP are in there because of Dave. I want to make sure that Dave covered. He was involved in both of those. And Jabber. Jabber is showing up in places. It's available. It's not ubiquitous yet. But these things are catching on. And, of course, we've got Apache and a bunch of other things that the guy from Hollywood talked about this morning. This is freely available infrastructural packs that are built on open source and free software principles and methods. This is a line that Mark Andreessen laid on me when I interviewed him right after the Mozilla announcement when they first, it was like 1998 or something. I did an interview with him, and he just dropped this line. He said, technology trends start with technologists. And I thought, that's pretty profound, too. They don't start with marketing people. They don't start with CEOs. I mean, look at the Wi-Fi thing. Look at war chalking, you know? These are techies starting this stuff. It's not the Jack Valentis even of the world, okay? You can't legislate that stuff. Okay, so he said that. And it made me think, what were the technologists up to when they started that world? Where were they coming from? And I think that the net's founding fathers, Doug Engelbart and Vannevar Bush and Paul Barron and Postel and Kahn, Kleinrock, and Tim Berners-Lee, Vincent. I think they built it to support civilization. They didn't do it for business. They did it for, you know, as a matter of fact, I think it was Larry Roberts would send emails to the intergalactic conspiracy to create the new Earth or some weird thing like that. They were having fun, but they were also building something that was for the good of everybody. So I want to take a look for a second at civilization itself. This is, how many of you here are familiar with the Long Now organization? Okay. That's great. You know, it's this Stuart Brand and some other guys started this organization, the purpose of which is to build a clock that will go bomb once every 10,000 years to give us a long view. And this is an abstraction of civilization that Stuart came up with that is extremely useful. He shows that some things change fast and some things change slower, but there are also dependencies involved. Culture depends on nature, and governance depends on culture, and infrastructure sits on top of governance, and there's commerce on top of that, and fashion on top of that. And those are the things that move fastest and often attract most of our attention. But there are dependencies involved here. There are also conflicts between the different layers there. So that's a handy kind of backdrop to some of the other things that I want to point at here, because I don't think the Nets founders were coming from fashion and commerce. I think they were coming from down here. I think they were coming from nature and governance and culture. And they supported those other things, but they weren't coming from there. So civilization is host to huge conflicts in here. And I think they mostly center around infrastructure. They really center around infrastructure. You know, certain commercial interests want to govern it. They're coming down from above and they want to govern infrastructure. And the geeks want it to govern itself. In fact, they want nature and culture to drive and support its governance. They're two completely different attitudes about what infrastructure is about. So right now, the Hollywood bigwigs are pushing for extreme net regulation, right? That's Jack Valenti and Michael Eisner. They want to turn the net into a regulated content distribution system, turn PCs into supply control devices, and have had success with copyright law and with the DMCA and with a bunch of other stuff, including the consume but don't try programming anything law, which Cory Doctorow calls the Anti-Mammal Dinosaur Protection Act. a good way of putting it. Yeah, it's great. And they rightly feel surrounded by geeks and their advocates. I mean, here's Larry Lessig that we heard talk, and there's Satan Mucius, and Eric, whose blog is Armed and Dangerous, and is very good, by the way. And Howard Rheingold, and Bruce, when he had long hair, and Corey, and Mitch Kapoor, and Jeffrey Barlow, the founders of the EFF. Glenn Fleischman, how many of you read Glenn? Probably a lot of you do. Great 802.11 blog, bunch of other blogs. He writes for a lot of magazines. He recently sued Hollywood for something or other, so he's out there making trouble. John Mad Dog Hall is here. I don't know if he's in the room or not, but John's another one with Linux International. And a picture of me, much younger, is the only one I could find on the web, just because I unplugged myself and I'm making trouble too. So the deeper battle is really, I think, between metaphors. Because Hollywood sees the net as a plumbing system for intellectual property and other content. It's a medium. They have TV. TV is a tube. There are pipes, and they're going to pump stuff down through pipes. They see things entirely in terms of distribution. That's where they fit. You know, if intellectual property comes out of here, a few people produce it for millions of consumers, which my friend Jerry Mikulski calls consumers gullets who live only to gulp products and crap cash. That's what a consumer is. But these guys talk about the consumer. That's what they're talking about. A passive, you know, single-celled organism at the end of a distribution pipe. And we need to challenge that. But that's the way they think. So that's on the one hand, they think that way. And on the other hand, geeks see the net as a place, a commons, right? This is a relatively new term applied here, but where people can make culture and do business. This is the meme that Larry wants to establish, and I think it's one that has an awful lot of foundation in the language that we use to discover a lot of what we do with the web. We have home pages, we have sites, they have addresses, we use a lot of real estate metaphors when we talk about the net. We go on the net, we don't go through the net, right? I mean, these are serious differences, and they're conceptual ones. One of the speakers this morning is a cognitive scientist, and I've studied a lot of cognitive linguistics. I hope you should talk about that. I didn't have time to go into some of it here. This stuff, these are other things, but we also do it ways. But we do talk about pipes, we do talk about city bits. You know, there is some foundation in that, but there's a conceptual war between these two metaphors. And I think infrastructure, in fact, was under a platform. When we talk about a platform like Windows, like this one, or Sunders, it generally happens in the commercial space. And beneath it is this set of things that support a platform. And I think it's like the net's geology. It supports what relies on it, and secrets, it's free, and it's like geology. And again, nobody owns it, everybody can use it, anybody can improve it. And it occurs in human nature. Get back to Craig's point, that this is something that we've made. This isn't like geology that God made or natural forces made. We are natural forces making things all the time. This is the power behind what Bruce was saying this morning. So you guys are a lot stronger than you may think you are because you're busy creating the world. It's the world you created, right? You're coming up from below. These guys have a dependency here. They're sitting on top of the stuff that we made. This is going to be on the web, by the way, so if you're pounding away trying to catch up with it, it'll be up. But on the other hand, Hollywood's anti don't understand infrastructure. They're up there. Listen, you know, they don't know. They really don't know. They think everything's happening up there. They're in the fashion business and they're in the commercial business. There's nothing that happens below that. They have no idea where infrastructure comes from or how it supports business. They only understand content. But I used to be a writer, and then all of a sudden I became a content producer. What the hell was that about? I mean, really, I mean, nobody used the term content to describe editorial and television, every other thing you can name, until the dot-com thing happened and everybody was busy copying Hollywood. You know, we're going to make all our money from advertising, just like TV. You know, no, you know, that never was going to work. But we wanted it to work, and so all of a sudden we got content. You know, so we have content and distribution. They don't understand that nature that changes faster than business or fashion. I wanted to create another slide. I didn't have time for it. But what really went weird here is that, remember, nature is slowest, and then culture a little faster, and governance a little faster than that, and then infrastructure a little faster than that, but still slower than commerce. But Napster comes along, and a bunch of these other things come along, and the world changed out from underneath these guys almost overnight, and they had no idea what to do with it. It was really weird, and they understood it even less once that happened. Because they had a fear response to it. They felt threatened by it. And they want to control the uncontrollable. That is their orientation right now. They want to stand at the ocean's edge and yell down the tides. And they want to bring in Washington to come in and build bulkheads and all kinds of other things to control nature. That's what they want to do.
Good job.
So in the meantime, the geeks want infrastructure to support business. It isn't necessarily that they're against business. Not that we're against, most of us are in business in one way or another. But there's a relationship here between what open source and free software guys make and how it's used by business. And it's a supportive relationship. And those are the Jabber guys in the middle, by the way. Which any Jabber guys here? Are Jabber at all? Like, is there like, there's like, or something like this? It's really great. It looks like the chess club. Even Jeremy a little bit, you know, he's anyway. So we wanted to support business plus the rest of civilization. It isn't just about business. I mean, commerce sits up here, but a lot of other things sit up there as well. You know, family life, recreation, name it. I mean, there's other stuff that civilization does besides commerce that happens sitting on top of infrastructure. You know, enjoying a good drive is something you do on top of infrastructure, right? So, and we want what we make to support all of civilization, including business. But there's a relationship here where business is a subset to the rest of civilization. But what we're producing, if you just go back here for a second, that what's been happening, what the geeks of the world have been making in the matter of geology, and this is where the net came from, is like there have been natural forces pushing up volcanoes, right, and gases that have lithified as the surface of the earth on which business is now being built. That's what the net is. You know, the net came up by these natural processes. It's like, almost like geology. So what we've produced are a source of natural building materials. When the pioneers first came over, we'll ignore the Indians for a moment, right? They first came over and said, look, infinite trees, right? We'll build it. We don't even need rock. We need rock. Let's build everything out of all these trees. They're free, right? We'll just take them. And so we created the Paul Bunyan myth, right? Think of business as Paul Bunyan. Well, that's what Linux is. Linux doesn't just grow on trees. It is trees. That's the line I got stuck at, and I was trying to explain to him what he asked me, name the three top applications for embedded Linux. And I said, well, name the three top applications for lumber. You got the same problem, guy. You know, it's out there, and you make anything with it. You can put it in these. You can put it in other things. I mean, you can make it small. You can make it big. You can produce big Hollywood movies with it. You can put it in a wristwatch. And it's free. Big problem. You know, if you're busy wanting to be in a business that competes with that. And you got it, totally. They're smart. They'll always tell you. There's not a paragraph that comes out of Microsoft that doesn't use the word smart. They're like, smart there. Just watch for that. It's an interesting thing. The smartest business in the world. Anyway, but that's what business is doing. They're like, Paul Bunyan, we're just going to go in and harvest this stuff. That's what Hollywood's doing with the Linux thing that we saw this morning. You know, well, we use the Macs as the workstations, but, you know, we want a big rendering wall. What a great metaphor that is, our render wall. the subsonics moving along and making heavy stuff. Talk about infrastructure. It's very cool. So what happens after that? This is where we're going. The software business is 30 years old, maybe, right? But the construction business is like 10,000 years old, and it's like a $2 trillion business worldwide. It may even be bigger than drugs, right? So, but we use construction metaphors. We have architects, we have builders, you know, we build software. You know, earlier when I was talking to one of you guys about the title for this, I used the term make, and I was corrected to say, no, use the word build. I said, great, that's my point. The software industry is turning into something like the construction industry, which, by the way, doesn't belong to some one company. It belongs to the professionals, architects, designers, and builders. It's mostly about who does the work and how. And I got this when I showed this 2 days ago to Rob Blitzer of Real Networks. He added this. He said, it's mostly a series of projects. Right. That's what we do. We do a series of projects. No matter if you've got a full-time job, we're doing a series of projects. That's what building things is. So software's turning into that. And most importantly, and Rob really loved this, there's no Microsoft. Name the Microsoft of construction. There are bigger companies than Microsoft. ASA Brown Bavaria in Switzerland is a monstrous company, like $40 billion. In terms of revenue, they're bigger than Microsoft. They don't control a damn thing. Not that I don't know. You're digging dams or somebody else is digging stuff down. But, you know, there's room in that industry for everybody to operate and nobody's going broke. That is the natural state of things. So infrastructure also supports markets. There's this wonderful idea that the market is a bazaar that we got from Eric Raymond. Eric said, you know, we're talking about real markets here. He introduced the term, the bazaar concept, with the cathedral of the bazaar, a nice plug for an O'Reilly book right there. But that's what happens. I mean, markets sit on top of that infrastructure. So when people say, we're looking for market forces to take care of things, well, that happens up there, and there are dependencies involved. So we have this issue of opposing perspectives going on, centered around infrastructure. The commercial interests often don't see the free and open sources of infrastructure. They miss them. They don't know where they came from, right? And on the other hand, the free and open source geeks often don't see the creative nature and accomplishments of commercial interests. Not because they're busy hating them or some other thing. They're just not interested. You know? I mean, you know, Richard's sitting down there at nature, okay? Like, you know, he's the thunder god in the center of the earth saying, I'm standing for gravity here. Okay? You can do whatever you want on the surface, but there's still going to be mass and gravity. Okay, so, and there's one law, and, you know, gravity is a law. Well, that's kind of what he says about the GPL. You know, you go up a level to culture, and there's Eric, a little, no, we've got to get 5,000 different lit licenses possible here. It's a little closer to commerce, you know. So OSI will countenance many more licenses, you know, because they're sitting a little closer to governance here. But still, for the most part, they're coming from below. Most of us are coming from below. We're not necessarily coming from the commercial end of things. And people like Brian, of course, are trying to make a living coming from both ways at the same time. Very interesting challenge. So to put this in perspective, I'm going to bring Craig Burton back in here again, because Craig made a point several years ago saying, you know, when we talk about open source, we often collapse distinctions. And he took a couple of distinctions and made a matrix out of it. He said, on the one hand, we've got closed and open. And on the other, we have proprietary and public domain. And he said, well, you know, the opposite of proprietary is not open. And the opposite of closed is not public domain. But it's very easy to collapse those two when you're busy thinking a certain way. So he says, you can collapse the distinctions if you're busy thinking, this is bad and this is good. You know, we said, and that happens with lots of things, in politics, all sorts of stuff. As soon as we start feeling very strongly about something, we collapse a lot of things that have nothing to do with each other. But, and this is his point again, and I really like it, if you get past the politics, you've got a very useful strategic framework, because up there, in the upper right, where the geeks think this is goodness, is ubiquity. You can create ubiquity. You can take advantage of ubiquity. You can take advantage of this stuff that's universal. So ubiquity creates infrastructure. That's where infrastructure lives. It lives in that place that's open and in the public domain. And it's not infrastructure until it becomes ubiquitous. This was actually a message to some extent to the Jabber guys. Jabber is getting there. It's not ubiquitous yet. Probably will be eventually, because there is not another IAM protocol that I know of that's open and free. But that's where you want it to end up. So companies like IBM are working this matrix like a chessboard. You know, they're taking advantage of stuff that's already there, like Linux and Apache and Jabber, and they're taking other things like Java, which Sun started, but they're trying to drag it over in that direction. the throwing a monkey wrench into the whole web services thing with UDDI in a constructive way. They took their open some of their development tools, their I think it's for Linux, I'm not really sure, but anyway, it's called Eclipse, and $40 million is returning it over. Well, that's another case of taking something that was proprietary and making it non-proprietary and was closed and making it open. And that's a strategic thing you did. But they're still holding patents. They're one of the biggest patent holders on the planet Earth. And there's still like PowerPC. There's all kinds of secrets in PowerPC. And it's, you know, but that's a platform thing. So there's a strategy involved here. You know, the idea is you either cause ubiquity or you adapt to its inevitability. And Apple's becoming masterful at this stuff, really, just in the last several years. They've done some interesting things earlier with USB, by adopting USB before other people did, and the SCSI. They were the first with the little 3.5-inch floppies and some other things like that. But, like, they're using Jabber, I'm told, in iChat. They drove adoption, they drove development of FireWire and also its adoption. They're early with Wi-Fi. They're doing it now with ZeroConf, which they're calling Rendezvous. They're telling me they're the number two contributor after Red Hat to the GCC. They took BSD and used it with Darwin. But they still have stuff that's proprietary, but it's open. You can get it, like the iApps, iMovie, iTools, iPhoto, and so forth. Coco is proprietary, but is freely available, same with QuickTime. They also hold patents there on the PowerPC group. So this matrix gives us a place where business can look and say, what do we want to keep closed? What do we want to keep open? You know, it's more or less abstract. It doesn't have to be moral. So it's a matter of carefully adopting or building ubiquitous infrastructural components. Real networks just got into this game. So, you know, so what they did is they took some of their patents and mostly other IP, and they pushed it up into the proprietary and open area, and they took some of this stuff and moved it over to the right. That's what they told me they did. I don't really know the names of the things they were doing this with. And sitting in the middle of it is Brian's company, CollabNet, that's helping them do this. There's a business in helping companies that are getting the clues to move some of this stuff into the infrastructure area. So this can be done. There is a business to be had here, and it's a smart thing to do. More companies, Microsoft will end up doing this. They're doing some of it anyway, probably, but they're going to end up doing more. So the question is, how do these two things fit together? We've got this matrix that I just talked about, and we've got the civilization abstraction I talked about before. And it's with infrastructure. You take this and rotate it, the one on the left, about 135 degrees to the right. You've got this. You've got proprietary and closed above, and you've got open and public domain below. Below is infrastructure, and on top is commerce, and commerce depends on what's below. Fairly simple, fairly easy. So the big question is, for companies, how do you create ubiquitous infrastructure and make money at the same time? Because they always want to say, how am I going to make money doing that? You know, Bill Gates said, how can you make money on the web? I mean, it's free, give it away. I don't know how to make money on the web. Well, you make money some other way. You figure it out pretty fast. Let's give away the browser. You know, we kill off all the competitors, and by the way, we create chaos and take advantage at the same time. So you cause anarchy and take advantage of it. And in fact, that's kind of what they did with the browser. That is exactly what Real Networks is doing right now. Real Networks is trying to cause disruption. I was talking to Brian about it. He thinks anarchy might be wrong, because anarchy is no rules, and there are rules involved here. So maybe it's disruption, but anarchy is a more fun word. Anarchy!
It's a churn.
Churn. Great churn? Yeah. You know, you just you know, the hole opens in the earth and the other companies fall in. That's kind of a fun thing. Right? You know, but that's what happens. I mean, actually, Netscape did a brilliant job of that with LDAP. LDAP was nowhere. They went to the University of... Microsoft was going to put Active Directory, what they then called, I think it was Cairo, which later became NT. And they were, well, there's going to be one directory for everything, and we're going to crush everybody between our operating system and our directory. And then Netscape came on and says, well, no, we'll just open up directory access with LDAP. And they bought the LDAP guys, Tim Howes, and these other guys in the University of Michigan, and completely fucked Microsoft's plans. Utterly. End of plans. You know, they had to start over. They had to completely start over with their plans on that. So that was a case of causing anarchy and taking advantage of it. I really wish that Netscape had kept doing that. It was a really brilliant move. You know, this is Craig's it. Put this up. So I did. I don't know much about web services, but he said, those things are causing infrastructure anarchy right now. And by that anarchy, certain standards are being driven to ubiquity. That's what's going on there. So here's how it ought to work, right? So if you're a commercial company, and you hired Brian, or you're the clues, and you're going to do it anyway. Take this. What do I need to own, and what do I not need to own, and what can I give away to the world so the world can make better use of it, and we'll all have better infrastructure? It takes natural matter. You know, your old commercial stuff is the humus that's that in, out of which new stuff is going to grow. You know, and it's very much, you know, the natural way of things. You know, whatever you do with your life, sooner or later you're going to get a return. You know, your body's going to get returned to the universe, like it or not. The idea is, what are you going to do? You're going to put down here. That's how it ought to work. How, you know, infrastructure. Commerce contributes to infrastructure. That's basically, you know, support from below, contribution from above. Makes complete sense. Now, how Hollywood sees it is, this is the problem right now. No, is you got to push these things down. You know, from commerce, you're going to push patents down here. We're going to push copyrights down here. We're going to push IP laws down here. Commerce governs infrastructure. You know, that's what they're thinking. And the natives can go to hell. That's literally, that's what they think. You guys, I know you built all this. Very nice. Thank you very much. Screw you. So Hollywood has very familiar plans for the next natives. Sound familiar? Let's put them here. What do you say? I know you used to be in North Carolina and you had like the whole East Coast and everything. Let's move you to Oklahoma. No, never mind. We got a little place up here where nothing grows. Go here. And that's what they want to do. And just for proof of that, this is part of that unconscious metaphor thing I was talking about earlier. Here is a letter that was sent to me by a friend of mine, and I'm not going to use his name, but I probably could, but I just made it Mr. Fu. He lives in Nevada, and he sent it to his senator, Harry Reid, and he wanted, I didn't know what he was talking about necessarily, he had a suggestion for a tag system or something. So thank you for contacting me to express your concerns with intellectual property rights. Now look at what they said. Look at what this guy says here. Congress must protect intellectual property rights while still allowing ordinary internet users to have access to public domain content. Now if that's not a reservation for everybody, I don't know what the hell is. That is march them off to the reservation, right there. Along with all the consumers, all the plankton out there that have no choice about everything. They're not going to care. They watch television. They're used to using a remote control. They'd really rather use a remote control than use a computer anyway. They're still in the majority. Let's just, you know, give them, let's burn IP and DRM management into everything in the world and we'll take care of this business, right? That's what they're thinking. So what kind of trouble can the restless natives make? So we've got these guys, and unfortunately I have to page through all of them here, but... So we've got these guys, and oh, I went back one. Okay, so we've got the source initiative, and we've got Creative Commons, and we have some more. Now this is what blogging does, okay, and also writing for Linux Journal. Yes, Brad.
I'm curious about that.
I forgot it. The FSM. Hold on. Tag it now.
I didn't spend 3 weeks of my time in.
No. Here we go. I need Bradley's picture in here. Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, well, let's make it.
You earned it.
Let's make it 60, you know. Okay. So there it is.
I'm flattered now.
Okay. It's not quite. So we all know. So give money to Brad before you leave. That's the deal.
No, not to me personally.
Not to you personally.
First I'll take it.
You'll take it. Yeah. All right. Whatever. So... But a few months ago, I was really annoyed when the Copyright Arbitration Royalty Panel, which should have really been called the Copyright Royalty Arbitration Panel, announced its plans to basically tax internet radio off the face of the earth. And that's how we have to talk about it. You want to talk to the conservatives about this? It's taxation, okay? It's hyper-regulation.
Why are you calling it it's taxation. It's not really taxation. People aren't getting any of the money. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Well, it's taxation without representation.
Yeah, it is absolutely taxation without representation. Okay. It is definitely grounds for tea in the harbor, okay? And my way of saying, let's throw some tea in the harbor is saying, hey, look, they're going to wipe out internet radio. Why don't we have a million geek march in Washington, right? So, and I just threw that in a couple things that I wrote. Jeff Gearhart, who runs the Linux show on the web, and that I'm on every week, said, great, let's do that. And he went ahead and he formed something called Geek Pack, which is a geek political action committee. And another thing to back it up, a nonprofit called the American Open Technology Consortium, AOTC, and made me president of it. So, hi, I want your fucking money too. We're all going to ask for money from other people. We don't have to get it from each other. There are people who actually have money you can probably go to, I would imagine, right? So, and most of them are not in this room. But the smartest people are always working for some other company. The money thing is much more relevant than that. The rich people are always somebody else, right? So, in any case, but these things are growing. You know, I'm involved in it now. We're just really starting, finally, to make things happen here. Lisa's interested in it. She's going to help. Anybody else who's interested in helping with AOTC or GeekPack. GeekPack basically is, the purpose of that is to put the heads of Hollings and Feinstein and other people on spikes as a public example of bad thinking. And the AOTC is primarily an educational organization. It's a nonprofit to educate the remaining senators and congressmen on how it really is. So, and it's intended as a democratic thing and working with the other organizations. So, and a way to look at this is to apply the logic of anarchistic marketing. This is where Clue Train was born, by the way. I was talking to Chris Locke on the phone about my theory of marketing, which is that the market fixations and conversation is fire, because, you know, the most interesting stuff catches on like wildfire, right? The stuff that's really worth talking about is combustible stuff that's going to catch on. So therefore, marketing is arson. And Chris said, well, why don't we just set some fire? Why don't we say things we think are true and see if they catch on? You know, and the conversation idea actually caught on, as the guys this morning were talking about. We need to have a conversation about this. So it's like it's out there. There are other ideas that can catch on with the lawmakers, and we need to set as many fires as we possibly can. So that's basically it, right there. So questions, comments at the time.
So, as a content provider,